nice to be back in Chicago again with all of you. During this weekend, we've been conducting a series of discussions from the same chapter, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, is Dhritarashtra quits home. So we'll see how far we get, trying to complete more of the chapter where we ended off. So we're just to fill you in case you missed some of the classes, we'll go back to the beginning of the chapter. Vidura has become a self-realized soul, a perfectly self-realized soul, fully God realized in every way by the mercy of his association with Maitreya. And in the natural way for one who has attained such a state, he's filled with compassion, and he wants to exhibit this compassion very much to one who needs it very much. And that person who needs it very much is his elder brother, Dhritarashtra. So, for no reason, no material reason, only for compassionate reason, he decides to return to the royal palace after being away for many, many years. And by this time, he is situated in the sannyas order. As I was coming in this evening or this afternoon from a program, one of the kids was here for the wedding. Asked me, "What's that stick you're carrying?" So that's what the stick is. Sannyas danda, indicating it's where in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition it's called tridanda sannyas, because there's three bamboo rods that run the whole length of this danda. In some traditions they just tie it with a string. Because I travel a lot, I put it inside a cloth to keep it from getting wrecked. But these three rods or dandas indicate the dedication of body, mind and words in service to Krishna. So Vidura had achieved this order of life, but more than achieving the order of life, he had achieved a realized stage, perfect stage, and he came back to share that with the royal family. Anyway, they received him very, very wonderfully, and they put questions before him about his travels, about his everything about Krishna, because his attainment was centered on Krishna. He was fixed in his devotional service to Krishna and his realization. So he shared those with the royal family. And then at the appropriate time, he took Dhritarashtra to the side and let him have it. He gave him his sadhu-like words and very clearly indicated that there was an alternative. We're discussing this afternoon. There is an alternative to growing old and dying. Now everybody has to die. But one can die an inglorious death, or one can die in such a way that the moments of life are steps to the doorway of liberation. They can be steps to rebirth or steps to the doorway of liberation. So he showed him the path. He not only showed him the path, he ordered him, "Get out of here, right now." Very heavy, Vidura. But he was with his brother, it was okay. And he was a sadhu, so it was okay. And Dhritarashtra knew that it was in his interest, so it was okay. And that's where we ended up today. One very significant part of all of this. Somebody's car is blocking. That's the license plate number? What kind of car is it? A brown Toyota. Okay. As long as we're going to distract everybody's attention, we might as well distract everybody's attention. Okay, so back to Srimad Bhagavatam. The message of a sadhu. So for the benefit of everybody, this chapter very much, practically three times over in different scenarios, is setting actors in the drama to portray the importance of association with a sadhu. And Vidura is being characterized as the emblem of a sadhu. Not only he was wise, not only he was detached, but he was perfectly realized in his position. And he was coming to give that, the compassion of the sadhu is characterized in this way. He interacts with others in just the right way, because in this chapter it's shown that there are different ways with different persons to do the same thing. But the same thing that's being accomplished is severing the knot of attachment to illusion. Prabhupada expresses very clearly that as long as one is situated in illusion, of course Vidura is saying the same, as long as one is situated in illusion, this means one doesn't, illusion means you don't see reality, that's what it means, and reality is Krishna. You don't see reality. Although reality is there at every moment, one sees illusion instead of reality. One sees the impermanent as very important. And even if one takes up religious activity, one does so with the purpose of enhancing one's enjoyment of illusion. Or as some people put it, to enjoy illusion religiously. So, even religious people may be in illusion as far as the purpose of life is concerned. And therefore, a sadhu is necessary, even in the lives of religious people, to cut through illusion and establish reality. This is the message of Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidhi pranipatina pariprashnina sevaya. Same message. Upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tadvidarshina. There has to be the right purpose in approaching life, in approaching even religious life, in approaching spiritual life. And that purpose is to attain loving service, attain shelter of, attain direct, tangible contact with the personality of Godhead. So according to that sincerity, Prabhupada writes expressively, according to that sincerity of purpose, one who takes up the right practices, who strives by right means, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is sure to achieve success. But one may take up even right practices, do the do's and don't do the don'ts, but hold on to a material conception of life, and what won't happen is one won't depend upon the personality of Godhead. And it's that dependence, sincere dependence upon the personality of Godhead, that places one in contact with him. Rupa Goswami writes this in Nectar Devotion, that it's not our practices in and of themselves that bring us to the goal. That doesn't mean we don't have to perform proper practices. But the practices in and of themselves, what's required in combination with those right practices, same message, is our eager desire to achieve the purpose of those practices. The purpose of those practices is what Vidura is trying to deliver to Dhritarashtra, at least the negative part, breaking of the illusion and establishing reality. So Dhritarashtra hears these words. He lets them enter. There's some resistance, one might imagine, because he's been doing this, as Prabhupada says, old bamboo doesn't very easily bend. Green bamboo bends, old bamboo breaks. So it's difficult for Dhritarashtra to take these words, very strong words. But he accepted them, and he immediately took them up. The message was to go to the north, go to the Himalayas, and engage yourself in just activities of detachment. Completely detach yourself from this so-called idea of being a royal man, and understand your real identity as an eternal spirit soul. Go there and give up your body in that condition. So there's a very interesting discussion. I'd like to spend a little time expanding on it. A little discussion about there has to be a proper balance between religious attachment and spiritual detachment. So here we go. When we were speaking this afternoon about the path of Nivritti Marg, which means progressive detachment from worldly things. One of our devotees, Purvan Kamalini, you know very well, Lakshmi Nisringa Prabhu. So he's preparing a seminar that I think is going to be very pertinent and a very interesting seminar over the Thanksgiving weekend in New York with some other people. So his topic is Nivritti, establishing proper balance, the role of Nivritti on the path of bhakti. So most of the persons here are householders, a few brahmacharis, and one danda-carrying sannyasi. This Nivritti is for everyone, whether householder, brahmachari, or sannyasi. It's not only for those who are wearing saffron. It's for everyone. This Bhagavad Dharma is the path of progressive detachment from worldly things. But then Lakshmi's discussion is going to be on where you put the fulcrum. Where's the leverage point? Where's the proper point for each person? Because it may be different for a different person, at least in the course of their spiritual progress. Where do you say, I don't need these things, or I should give these things or this in charity, and the other is something that I require? Where do I properly balance this? And it's not only for householders, it's also for those who are cultivating the path of renunciation as brahmacharis and as sannyasis. So it's an interesting point of discussion in our path of devotional service, even today in our society. So what's happening here is Dhritarashtra has an inordinate amount of attachment, excessive amount of attachment to comforts and to the honor that goes with being in the royal family and so forth. Because of that attachment we were discussing today, he was blind to seeing that there's an alternative And at this later stage of his life, it was pretty much he had to go the whole distance. He had to completely, practically speaking, just give up his body. Or to speak of the things that go along with the body, wealth, family, comforts, honor, prestige, house, everything. We're not at the stage of life, or at least most of us, are not at the stage of life of Dhritarashtra where his teeth are falling out, liver is failing, mucus is coughing up. He's about to expire. Most of us aren't at that stage yet. But so where is that position of detachment? Where should we be religiously attached to our family or our whatever our various duties are in life, whatever they may be, occupation and persons who are depending upon us in different ways and all of those things within society? And where do we place our attachment to Krishna? Of course, in a mature stage of devotion, one is fully attached to Krishna. I'll share with you one little side note, but it's an interesting thing. So, how many here received Back to Godhead magazine? Ooh, very nice. If you don't have Back to Godhead magazine subscription, please request one when you go outside. It's a very wonderful magazine. It's every 2 months, and many very nice topics are discussed there. So in last issue or 2 issues ago, there's the Nittai Gurusundar and his Matsya and his 3 children in Memphis, or Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's a Dr. Singh, Dr. Ravi Singh. I was visiting them 2 weeks ago, and when I reached their home, their teenage daughter was not at home. She was out doing some civic duties. She's 9th grade. When she graduated from 8th grade, from junior high school to high school, they, in their school, they created a certificate, or they created an honor for her that didn't even exist, because she's such an outstanding personality. So the outstanding graduate of the junior high school going into high school, they had a whole assembly to give her this award, the principal of the school, her teacher. The teacher was in tears. Her mother was very proud. If everyone in this school was like Shruti Singh, we would have the most wonderful school in all of America. And she came up and got her award. But I could see why these weren't devotees that were saying Shruti Singh chants the most rounds, or knows the most verses in Bhagavad Gita, or makes the best samosas in Halava. They were just appreciating her qualities. Because everything that she did, with her quality, because she's imbibed this from her parents, because her parents live this way, whatever they do it for Krishna. They're very, very wonderful devotees, exceptional devotees. And she's an exceptional kid who's taken on the qualities of her parents very, very nicely. And this exhibits, even in America, what to speak of in Hastinapur, how it's possible for someone to exhibit this proper positioning of things, where she's very, very attached to her family. She has a younger brother, Abhishek, so the kids, he's still in junior high school, and they're at the stage where the boys say the girls are, you know, they've got cooties, whatever that, or some expression, they're just bad, they don't associate with the girls. And he says, no, I'm not going to have this attitude towards my sister. She's my sister. I respect her, and my little sister, I respect her, and my mother too. I said, leave me alone. You take your idea about cooties and go somewhere else. And so he's ostracized by his friends for being, not being, whatever, socially pressured into whatever their mindset is, because he just has an understanding that this is the right way to offer respect and see Krishna, just like my mother and father do. Amazing. Amazing. So, Dhritarashtra wasn't able to see Krishna. He wasn't able to make a proper balance between his duties to his family and so forth and so on, because he was just attached. That's all he knew, was attachment. So by the good by the benediction of getting the association of a sadhu, in this case his younger brother Vidura, he got released from that situation. And his good wife Gandhari followed. And in the description, it actually wasn't customary for a person like Dhritarashtra to take this very strong vrata, to just leave, and that his wife would follow. But this is the quality of Gandhari. She was the emblem of chastity in so many ways throughout her whole life, and certainly at the conclusion of their life, she just wanted to accompany her husband. So Vidura went with them, because here's blind Dhritarashtra and his wife who has a blindfold out over her eyes. How are they going to get around? Vidura had to take them. They're going into the forest. So Vidura accompanied them. There they go in the dead of night. And the whole royal family doesn't even know what's going on until the next morning, when Yudhisthira wakes up and he performs his morning religious duties. And then Yudhisthira goes to pay respects to his uncle and his aunt, and he finds that they're not there. So immediately Yudhisthira then goes to the servant, or the personal assistant of Yudhisthira. Who's the personal assistant? Excuse me, of Dhritarashtra. Who's that? Sanjaya. And he goes to Sanjaya, and Sanjaya doesn't know where they are either. And Sanjaya gets really upset. Sanjaya starts saying some very heavy things too. He said that this Dhritarashtra, he's cheated me. I've been his faithful servant for so many, many, many years. And Sanjaya knew everything. Sanjaya knew all, just like Vidura knew everything, all the intrigue and everything. Sanjaya knew all of it. And he knew why it was there too. He knew Dhritarashtra's heart very, very well. He knew that he was very, very attached. But he would always confide in Sanjaya. So here's his two responses, very interesting. Yudhisthira's response is that he's blaming himself for the difficulty that Dhritarashtra is now, wherever he is undergoing. This is the quality of a Vaishnava, is when there's some interpersonal thing that's going on, just by nature, by reflex, without even thinking about it, Yudhisthira is thinking, I'm such an ungrateful personality that my uncle Dhritarashtra, who took care of us in the absence of our father, like his own children, of course, like his own children, he tried to kill us in so many ways and plotted again. But he didn't. His mind didn't go to those things. His mind went to how he received so much service from Dhritarashtra. He gave us royal facilities. He didn't have to do all that. He did all that. Built this nice country house made of shellac for us. And so many things. He was such a kind person. And here I am, so ungrateful. So he knew my lack of gratitude. And so out of disgust, he left. We killed his sons. We destroyed all his plans. He just became frustrated and left. He was just feeling badly about his own lack of qualification. That's Yudhisthira. And Sanjaya is feeling cheated. Sanjaya is not an ordinary person either. Anybody can witness a conversation that's happening some many miles away simultaneously by transcendental television is pretty good. Pretty advanced yogi. Prabhupada used that phrase. It was by mystic power given to him by Vyasadeva, but he had this ability, which, so he wasn't an ordinary person. So they're taking a hard look at both Yudhisthira and Dhritarashtra, Yudhisthira and Sanjaya, because of course it was all three. They knew that Vidura was also gone, so they knew he was somehow part of this whole deal, the Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. But there they are, feeling horrible. Imagine if you had a blind uncle that's 100 years old, but he just takes off. You don't know where he went. You'd be in anxiety. You'd be concerned about that person. So Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, they knew that would be the result. But they went anyway. So then Prabhupada discusses this point. Was Dhritarashtra wrong for just leaving his family this way? So what was his alternative? His alternative was he could have waited till the next morning and said, "My dear nephew Yudhisthira, time has come for me to go to the forest. Please give me permission, I'm gone." Is he going to say yes? He's going to say no. "Sanjaya, you've been with me for years and years and years. You must stay here in the palace and I'm leaving." Is Sanjaya going to say yes? No. But he needed to do that. He needed to just break. He needed to do that. It was the religious, it was the right thing to do. So for that higher cause, one has to be very careful with this understanding, but for a transcendentally higher cause, one may have to do such things. Because actually, the higher understanding is, what they didn't know, anyway, what happened was that Dhritarashtra achieved a higher destination as a result. So if we know that someone achieves a higher destination as a result, we should be very happy for them. They may not be in our immediate company anymore, but if we know that they've achieved some higher destination, that's glorious. We should be happy for them. And their anxiety was because they knew that Dhritarashtra was attached, but they didn't know that his heart had been changed. But that's what enabled him to do what he did, because his heart was changed. And Prabhupada comments that it's not possible to take a position of successful steps on the path of nivritti, like taking of the sannyas order, or those of you who are grihasthas, gradually as life passes and your maturity, your spiritual maturity develops, that you do without certain things. So it's not possible to maintain that, Prabhupada comments, unless you're absolutely certain, you're factually convinced that there's a greater happiness available, that you're actually going to meet that. Ultimately, you're going to meet Krishna. Without that faith, with some deep conviction in that principle, it's not possible. One can give things up out of frustration with life or something like that. You can't maintain it. Prithushava Prabhu was telling me about some high school program that he and Donna Kelly go to every year, this Glenwood High School, wherever it is. And I was thinking as he was describing to me about that, one of the common questions that people ask, in high school classes, they're very, very frank. They say anything, whatever's on their mind. And there's lots on their minds. So anyway, one of the common questions that they would ask is there some meaning of this color that you wear? Someone's wearing white, you're wearing this color, what's the meaning? So the meaning is, this is the indication of someone who's living a life of celibacy. And they go, sometimes they just blurt it out, "My God, celibacy." So then my response when they say that is, not only celibacy, but can you imagine celibacy for lifetime. Does it even make it easier? Celibacy for a year? If you're thinking that's wild because you're not doing that. For a year? 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? 30 years? Can you imagine? I said, if you can't imagine it, or try, if you can imagine it, try to understand this. There's something on the other side of that maintaining celibacy. There's something that's being experienced. Otherwise, you can't maintain it. And they were going, yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine it, but yeah, it's got to be. High school kids. American high school kids. So, this is the requirement. The requirement for success, because this is what this chapter is about, at least this particular section of the chapter is, taking the words of the sadhu to heart and actually sustaining those activities that further one on the path of nivritti. Ultimately, this nivritti, in the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this path of nivritti is to bring us to the position of full attachment to Krishna. You can say that in different ways. Where one is always carrying thought of Krishna. Wouldn't it be nice if you could go to your place of work and have Krishna thought in your mind all day long? Wouldn't that be nice? So but the message of the Bhagavatam is to do like that all day long. And the strength to do that comes from these activities of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And striving in those hearing and chanting about Krishna activities with the right purpose in mind, to gain affinity for Krishna, not just relief from this madness, but attachment to Krishna, affinity for Krishna, real affection for Krishna. So Sanjaya can't understand what happened. Why did he do this to me? Yudhisthira was thinking, what have I done to Yudhisthira? What have I done to Dhritarashtra? Sanjaya is thinking, what has he done to me? Very different mentality. And they're both very, 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 very disturbed. So I just conclude with this. Narada comes on the scene. Yudhisthira is such an exalted devotee that just like that, Narada always comes just at the right time with the perfect understanding to set Yudhisthira straight. And when Narada speaks, he says almost the same thing. I don't think it's a mistake that he says almost the same thing to Yudhisthira that Vidura sent to Dhritarashtra. In other words, we're getting a lesson in this chapter. The lesson is, my dear Prabhu, the invincible hand of time is there. That in this case, Narada is saying, the invincible hand of time, that's the Supreme Lord. Time, Kala Shakti, is an energy of the Lord. And we know, Kalosmi, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am that time energy. It's none different than me. And through this unseen hand of time, unseen hand of the Lord, he brings people together. He allows them to associate for some time. And then that same unseen hand of the Lord takes them apart. Prabhupada gives this example like the tossing of the waves of the ocean. We may think, oh, I missed the other clump of seaweed. But that's the action of time. So that's what Narada is saying to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Don't lament. He gets really specific. He says, even if you think, he gives like, literally, he gives 6 different philosophical ideas of self. Even if you think the body is the self, or if you think And he gives different philosophies that were current at the time. Even if you have a cuckoo philosophy, a wrong philosophy, you still shouldn't lament. If life is just a coming together of material combinations, and they fall apart, then what does it matter anyways? What's the significance of two clumps of seaweed coming together and separating? Do we lament? No. So, if the hand of time brings events into place, don't lament. And those events then change. They're going to change. Prabhupada uses two other metaphors to explain this. The clouds in the sky. I don't know if I used to do this when I was a kid. Look at the clouds in the sky. Kids play a game. They look at the clouds and say, what does that cloud look like? And it looks like a dragon. And then they get all scared. Oh, a dragon. And then the other one says, no, it's not a dragon anymore. It's a pussycat. Then it's okay because it's a pussycat. And one time there's fear and there's joy over a cloud in the sky. And then wait a while longer and it's gone. The whole thing's gone. So that's life in this material world. Some things come together for some time and we become very happy, and they're taken away and we become very sad, and we don't see the reality. We don't see reality when we're... The message of this chapter is we don't see reality when we're attached. So Narada is saying to Yudhisthira Maharaj, give up this attachment to this temporary illusory. The Lord had some plan for Dhritarashtra. He will be in a better situation. I'll tell you, in 2 days' time, he's leaving his body and he'll go to a higher destination. If you want to know the truth, that's what's going to happen. And so, be happy. Don't be lamenting over his welfare. You're not his protector anyways. The Supreme Lord is his protector. If you think you are his protector, that's another illusion. And that's an important part of this message. If we forget the protecting hand of the Lord, then we become filled with lamentation and so many kinds of illusion. We become covered by illusion. So the plea then by Narada to Yudhisthira is to become Krishna conscious. So this is the value of a sadhu's association. Maitreya clears Vidura's understanding so he becomes realized. He clears the darkness of attachment and illusion of Dhritarashtra. Narada clears the affection and false lamentation of Yudhisthira Maharaj. So we all very much require, similarly, saintly association, sadhu sangha. And maybe next week we'll conclude the rest of the chapter. There's another nice concluding part, but there isn't time. Hare Krishna. So any comments or some questions someone would like to ask from what we covered? If not, we'll have our... Oh, Kamalini.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, there, in the chapter, this was... I lost track of time. Yesterday, I guess. There in the chapter where... the section of the chapter where Vidura is blasting Dhritarashtra, there are three stages of renunciation, three categories of renunciation. The first is, just as you said, out of frustration, dira. I want to become free from these disturbances, and so I renounce. Out of frustration, I renounce. And that's an impetus for renunciation. But it, as I just explained this evening, it won't endure unless there's something spiritual or tangible, a tangible thing on the other side. And I also tried to allude to this idea that we discussed it more elaborately this afternoon, there has to be a religious attachment to our duties in this world and our relationships in this world, religiously, not otherwise. Otherwise, it's inordinate amount of attachment without religious sense of executing things. And in the religious sense of executing things, just like Yudhisthira Maharaj, when time was right, when he got word that Krishna had left the planet, he left. He didn't even go to Draupadi and said, "Goodbye, I'm leaving." He just left. And that's not, in his case, maybe in our case it's something else. In his case, it wasn't due to impersonalism or frustration. It was due to actually being attached to the purpose of that religious duty, which is becoming attached to Krishna. So in our case, certainly that's something that we have to be wary of. That's what I was meaning by this balance. The balance between recognizing our needs, in our worldly needs, fulfilling or acting upon those worldly needs in a religious way, but making sure, monitoring all the time, there's proper spiritual attachment. Now your point is one may, out of suffering or frustration, just totally neglect. That's not religious either. Neither was spiritual nor religious. It's just frustration. It's another material thing. The advice given to Dhritarashtra by Vidura was something different. Your body's finished anyways. The days are few. Now there's a little strength left in your body. Go and give up your body. So he did that for a greater good, not just frustration. So your point is, if we just do something out of frustration, that's not greater good, nor will it endure, nor will it serve any really beneficial purpose other than you just, some relief of your distress happens for a moment. And then by acting irresponsibly, then you have another distress. Yes. What positive thing did he achieve? Well, whatever the mind, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chajantante kalevaram, whatever the mind is fixed on at the time of death, that state one will attain without fail. So if he's at the time of death, he's there, "Oh Yudhisthira, hold my hand. Oh Gandhari, tell me how much you care about me." "Oh Arjuna, tell me how much you're sorry for Bhima for killing my son." And, you know, something like that. I was taking a subway ride home once from distributing books at JFK Airport on the subway, and I saw somebody dying on the subway platform. There's a crowd of people around, which apparently he just hit the pavement just very short while ago. And he was there kind of flailing around, and there's a crowd around, and somebody said, "Give him what he wants, ask him what he wants. This is, you know, he's leaving his body." So one person crouched over and said, "Tell me, John, what is it you want? Can I have a cigarette? Can you make a call to Julie for me?" Two things in his mind: his girlfriend and a cigarette. And he leaves his body. What's going to happen? So what Vidura was telling Dhritarashtra, you're overly attached. If you die in this condition, you're an exalted personality. Let go of that attachment and fix your mind in a spiritual position. He didn't give him the ultimate advice. He gave him just detach yourself advice. So he would go to a higher destination, at least. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.